The following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, where we will talk, hopefully, for the next 3 hours, nothing but sports. And also, we got the Olympics. We got the Olympics going on too, so we're probably gonna dive into the Olympics as well. And the reason why I say hopefully is because if anybody listened to last week's show, we got cut off after the second hour because for some reason Blog Talk decided to disconnect me. I don't know why, but I didn't touch anything. That's all I know. Anyways, if you guys want to call in and talk some sports with Lou and myself, you can call in at 657-383-1308. We will hopefully be live on the air for at least the next 2 hours before we go into the hour after show. I do want to touch upon, Lou, wanted to do this last week. I was going to do this last week when JB had joined in, but because we got rudely disconnected, we didn't get a chance to talk about it. But I want to talk about the MLB draft, as we saw quite the surprise to kick off the draft this year. As it seemed like the early draft was going to be dominated by the three big high school shortstops, with Marcelo Meyer, Jordan Lawler, and Brady House potentially going 1, 2, 3 to the Pirates, the Rangers, and the Tigers. However, the Pirates decided to throw a complete monkey wrench into everything and take catcher Henry Davis out of Louisville with the first pick, which absolutely stunned everybody because it's like, okay, if we're taking a guy that was projected by many to go number four to the Red Sox as the first pick, how the hell is the rest of this first round going to shape up? I don't blame Pittsburgh. You take a look at what Henry Davis was able to do in college. He was easily the best. The best power hitting catcher, hitting 15 homers this year for Louisville. I don't know if he's necessarily the best game caller, because there are quite a few game calling catchers in college baseball this past year that I'm surprised. One in particular, Casey Opitz, didn't get drafted until way later on in the draft this year, because I would consider him to be probably not just one of the best game callers of the draft, but also he probably has one of the best arms for a catcher in this year's draft. But Henry Davis, he went number one overall mainly because of his power bat, which is something that Pittsburgh has been missing dearly out of a lot of their players. I mean, they haven't had a real power bat, honestly, in quite some time. The only name on the team, probably. Well, no, I was going to say Jason Bay. Back in the Jason Bay days, before he ended up becoming a member of the Red Sox, Jason Bay, if I recall, was one of their last big power hitters. Now, I would include Andrew McCutchen, but McCutchen was more known for contact as opposed to power. So, I don't really think you could include him in the in the power discussion. But obviously they needed a power bat, and Henry Davis definitely provides them that. Now, the Texas Rangers, they drafted Jack Leiter with the number 2 pick.
Yes.
There were a lot of mock
Al's
drafts
boy.
That had him falling. Yeah, Al's boy, exactly. A lot of mock drafts had him falling number 4 to the Red Sox. A lot of mock drafts, honestly, they had it either going Henry Davis or Jack Leiter for the Red Sox.
Right.
But Baseball America, very late in the process, had the Rangers taking Jack Leiter, and that's what ended up happening. I mean, it makes sense. They do need a future ace pitcher, which is pretty much what Jack Leiter is looking to develop into. They said, if anything, he could potentially reach the majors as early as next year.
Hmm.
So he's that far ahead of everybody else.
Just like his
the
father.
Detroit Tigers. Yeah, who knows? Maybe he'll have close to the same career as his father did.
Maybe. Okay, now
the
fire.
Yeah, the Detroit Tigers, they took Jackson Jobe, right-handed pitcher. He was known for being one of the top pitchers of this class as well. But I am kind of shocked that granted he's actually coming out of high school, but I'm kind of shocked that Kumar Rocker fell as far as he did to the Mets at number 10.
Hmm.
Because apparently.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Because despite the fact the Mets are in first place, they do need help with their pitching.
They do.
Because their star players are out.
And my understanding is there was something wrong with his physical, I guess. I mean, it's not going to prevent him from signing, but apparently something happened with his physical. I wonder if it was a pre-existing injury or something.
Probably.
I do know he was injured part of the year this year. I was kind of surprised that he fell all the way to 10, down to the Mets just taking a look at the Royals and the Angels who passed on him with, pick number 7 and pick number 9. Instead, they opted to go with Frank Mazzucato and Sam Bachman.
Mazzucato.
I kind of thought that Rocker – I knew that Rocker would kind of slip, but I didn't think he would slip as far as he did.
Mm.
And the Red Sox, at number 4, they took Marcelo Meyer, who a lot of people believe to be the best player in this draft class, as he was ranked number 1 overall on many mock drafts. Now, what's weird about this, though, is they already have a stacked shortstop system. They got Xander Bogaerts, who signed for 6 years, and they have Jeter Downs, who they acquired in the Mookie Betts deal. So they're going to use Marcelo Meyer down the road as trade bait. Something's going to have to happen to where he's probably going to either switch, or maybe they'll have Jeter Downs switch position. But it sort of seems like the road is pretty packed to the point where he's not really going to have, a logical road to the majors.
Right.
But he is considered by many to be the best player in this draft class.
Yes.
Now the Yankees, I know the Yankees Uh-oh. were interested in Rocker. The Yankees at number 20, they ended up taking Trey Sweeney.
Yes.
Out of Eastern Illinois University, a shortstop. And Sweeney is coming off of a terrific redshirt sophomore year, which he was named a first-team All-American by Baseball America, as well as Perfect Game in ABCA, becoming the first player in Eastern Illinois history to earn to earn first-team All-American honors at the NCAA Division I level.
And a perfect game, too.
Well, no, I guess Perfect Game is one of those baseball pundit sites like Baseball America.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like Perfect Game is one of those like Bleacher Report or something. Honestly,
I don't trust Bleacher Reports.
No, but the only actual site that I recognize out of those three is Baseball America. So,
oh yes, of course.
But he was also named the Ohio Valley Conference Player of the Year this past season as well, for Eastern Illinois University. So it seems like the Yankees have they may have something here with this shortstop. Not only is he a contact hitter, but he is also a power hitter. And he's making improvements in his defense. So it seems like, I'm not going to say they're going to have the next Derek Jeter, but it's possible that
one Jeter
might have something here. Well, obviously. But I think it's possible, based off of what's being talked about with this kid, Sweeney, they may have something here with him, from what it looks like. And looking at going down the list here, obviously we had the Pirates. They took Davis. The Rangers took Leiter. Tigers took Jackson Jobe. The Red Sox took Marcelo Meyer. The Orioles, they went with Colton Cowser, which was a little shocking to some people. I guess some people thought that they would go with Brady House, one of the shortstops. Instead, Brady House ended up going 11th to the Washington Nationals. The Arizona Diamondbacks, they took Jordan Lawler, one of the other high school shortstops, with the 6th pick. Mazzucato, like I said, went to the Royals at 7. Benny Montgomery went to the Rockies at 8. Bachman to the Angels at 9. Kumar Rocker to the Mets at 10. And I mean, there was a whole bunch of top-level talent. Hell, even one of the other shortstops, Khalil Watson, fell all the way to number 16 when he was considered to be at least a top-4 pick. So, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, Lou, what must be in, you know, what must come out that ends up seeing these players drop so far?
Yeah, I'm figuring out myself. Rocker, I think, was expected to be at that level, though, at number 10. I didn't see him going higher. I'm going to mention that pitcher from the Braves, where John Rocker. Oh boy, that was a battle. That was one of the Braves' better players. But of course, every time we expect, what we think is going to happen, somebody always throws a monkey wrench in, and that's what happened.
Yeah, it's possible.
Now, Leiter, I expected at number two or somewhere close to that, so that wasn't surprising me at all.
No, yeah, I honestly did not see. If he fell, I did not see him falling past the Red Sox at 4.
No.
I said, as a matter of fact, they said that the Red Sox and Leiter's camp were making behind the scenes moves on the week heading into draft week to try and steer him towards the Red Sox at number 4, but obviously, you know, the Rangers, apparently they were contacted, I guess, to potentially go elsewhere with their pick. However, they never strayed. Jack Leiter was their guy all the way from the very beginning. So, and it makes sense because they haven't had an ace, a real legitimate ace pitcher in quite some time. So it kind of makes sense, in all honesty. So not only did we have the draft, but also coming up this week, we will have it'll be a week from today. Next Saturday is the Major League Baseball trade deadline.
Yes.
Or actually, no, it's Friday. It's Friday, not Saturday. It's Friday. Friday at 4.
Close enough.
It's weird because usually it's on the 31st, but instead they're doing it on the 30th this year, where there are dozens of players that are on the trade market, and Major League Baseball has actually compiled a whole bunch of them on MLB.com and has given their predictions. And if you're a Yankee fan, I am. Good news. It's good news for the Yankees on at least two fronts. Right now, they have the Yankees acquiring Anthony Rizzo from the Chicago Cubs.
Chicago, yes.
And they also have the Yankees acquiring. Hang on a second. Where is? I had seen a second name that they were attached to. They have, maybe it was just Anthony Rizzo. That's weird. I thought I saw them linked to two different teams, or two different players. But regardless, you know, it's obvious the Yankees need, if they feel that they can get back into this season, they need to do something with what they're going with. And hang on real quick, not to jinx anybody, but we have two no-hitters currently ongoing.
Why?
First in Houston. Yep, two of them. First in Houston with the Houston Astros, 3-0. We have a no-hit bid currently going by Bryant. Oh, actually, no, it would be a combined no-hitter, so it's not really considered a no-hitter. It would be a combined no-hitter because Framber Valdez went through six no-hit innings. So, yeah, I guess you can maybe count it as a no-hitter, but not a no-hitter by one singular pitcher. However,
what was his pitch count?
One. Let me double check. I think it was high up there, though.
That's what I thought.
Let's see. Valdez. He was at 99 pitches. Yeah. If you're 99 mm-hmm. pitches after six innings, he was done.
Borderline.
However, there is a second no-hitter currently underway in the top of the ninth inning. The LA Angels, led by Patrick Sandoval, who currently has 100 pitches tonight. The Angels lead 2-0 over the Minnesota Twins, and Patrick Sandoval is one inning away from throwing a no-hitter with one walk and 12 strikeouts on the night for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. So
I'm turning to that game right now.
So we will keep track of that, but it looks like from all indications he may end up coming back out to the mound for the ninth inning. Which I
have the game on MLB right now.
They only need, I think, what, two more no-hitters to break the record for no-hitters in a single season?
Wow.
But
I forget what the record is.
I forget what the record is. It was set a couple of years ago, though, I think.
Oh.
I think it was eight or nine no-hitters by Major League Baseball teams in a single season. Huh. I might be wrong, though. But we do have some deadline predictions. First, starting off with Trevor Story. of the Colorado Rockies. He's been one of the more obvious trade deadline candidates ever since Nolan Arenado got shipped over to St. Louis. It's basically become a question of not if, but when will Trevor Story be shipped off by the Rockies, who are clearly in a rebuilding phase at this point. Well, according to MLB.com, they're predicting that the Oakland Athletics will acquire Trevor Story. And it would kind of make sense considering where Oakland is in their division. Currently in a dead heat, if I recall correctly, for their divisional. They're currently the Astros have gained a little bit of ground on them. 3.5 games behind the Astros for the Athletics. But still, it's still a tight race over there in the AL West. So Trevor Story would probably be a big upgrade for the Oakland Athletics. The Yankees, they have also been linked to him as well, as they could always move Gleyber Torres back to second base and put Trevor Story in at shortstop. But there's obviously a question of what would have to be given up in order to acquire Trevor Story, considering he is probably one of the biggest prizes, if you would, of this year's trade deadline.
Correct. Yeah, I think
so.
I
don't know that is something to keep an eye on. If you're a Yankee fan, they are linked to Trevor Story, and it is a possibility. But MajorLeagueBaseball.com, they seem to see the Oakland Athletics as the favorites to land Trevor Story at the deadline this year.
What do you think the future is in Oakland, though?
You know, that's a good question, because even when Oakland has been successful, they haven't really gotten the fan, if I recall correctly, haven't really gotten the fan support compared to other big teams like the Red Sox and the Yankees and the Cubs, or, you know, arenas that normally get a lot of fans. But Oakland, for some reason, they've been struggling with attendance. I don't know why, considering they're a 56-43 team.
You know, the thing is that Oakland doesn't really support a lot of its teams to begin with. I mean, you know, the Raiders left. The Warriors went up across the bay to San Francisco. Now this team. So Oakland really doesn't support its teams at all, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's weird. And it's almost sort of like Oakland may become what Los Angeles ended up becoming, where, you know, they ended up losing the Rams, and, you know, they ended up going without football for quite some time in Los Angeles. Then once fan outcry started forming, you know, the push eventually ended up happening to bring football back to Los Angeles. So I think it's possible that you could see, and also another thing has to do with the change in the economy, you know, that maybe because of the change in the economy, people may not be able to afford to go to games like they used to. So that's another thing to take into account as well, especially in a big area like Oakland, for example. So maybe perhaps that could be a reason for the poor attendance. But it's been kind of 50-50 though with the Athletics, because I think aren't they trying to lobby for a new arena, a new stadium?
So far there's been no
movement, from my understanding.
When it comes to the league
approving of their request. So I don't know. You know, I still think Oakland is probably going to be up in the air when it comes to whether or not they're going to stay, or if they're going to end up relocating, because that's another problem. You may potentially have the Tampa Bay Rays relocating as well. You'll basically have two teams fighting over where to go, because you know Montreal is probably going to be a suitor to try and maybe bring back the Montreal Expos. I heard that Vegas, apparently they're trying to get a baseball team in Vegas. Maybe the Athletics may follow suit of the Raiders. So I don't know. It remains to be seen what is going to happen with the Athletics. I don't think, though, if there is going to be a move, I don't think it'll be for a while, because obviously, you know, these things do take time.
Yes, they do. But it's been, you know, there's been a lot of talk about it, so.
Yeah. Now, for some of the other players that have been linked to the trade deadline, MLB.com is predicting that John Gray of the Rockies will stay as a member of the Colorado Rockies, in particular because he does want to stay, apparently, with the organization. So that is one big reason why Colorado may probably keep him. Javier Baez is expected to stay with the Chicago Cubs. Chris Bryant, though, is rumored. They're predicting that he will move. He will go to the San Francisco Giants. As if they didn't have enough power in their lineup to begin with. They're going to add somebody like Chris Bryant, who, by the way, can play multiple positions, not just third base, but also all three positions of the outfield.
Yes.
Talk about utility for the Giants. That's probably the one guy that they're going to want to pick up or try to pick up with these deadline moves. Now, as far as pitchers go, they're saying that the Mets are going to be pretty aggressive at the deadline this year. MLB.com has them acquiring Zach Davies as well as Andrew Chafin. And as far as Craig Kimbrel goes, they have Craig Kimbrel going to the LA Dodgers. And man, if the Dodgers pitching staff wasn't menacing enough, imagine adding the old Craig Kimbrel. I'm talking Craig Kimbrel back when he was a member of the San Diego Padres, where he was pitching below one ERA. This is the Craig Kimbrel that's pitching this year. So anybody that gets Kimbrel, expect your bullpen to basically shoot right up to the top.
I hate to break this to you, but the no-hitter is now gone.
Oh, no. Oh, yep. Who broke it? Polanco, who ended up breaking it? Brent. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Brent. Brent Rooker, who's batting 108 on the season.
What?
Batting 108 on the season with one homer.
You get up to a loser.
Yeah. A nobody broke up the no-hitter.
Joke.
According to MLB Game Day here, and the pitch was right down the middle. I'm looking at the strike zone that they have on here, and it was literally first pitch right down the middle. And it looks like they have taken out Sandoval, I think.
Yeah, with good reason. Of all the ones you gave up, you had to give it to somebody who's batting only 108, and you gave up to him.
Well, he finishes the night with 106 pitches, 67 of them for strikes. He is pitching to Max Kepler, actually. So, no, he's still in there.
Yeah, might as well finish it
out. You know who else had a pretty good night, a pretty good day today, was Nate Eovaldi of the Red Sox, even though he didn't factor into the decision. Eovaldi, he went through 7 2/3 innings before Adam Ottavino. He did give up one run initially before Adam Ottavino decided to come in and completely blow the game to shit. And luckily, Eovaldi was not on the hook for the loss. The loss instead went to Ottavino. But Eovaldi was pretty much dominating the Yankees for most of the game today until the final batter he ended up facing. Actually, the last couple of batters, I should say, he ended up facing, where he ended up giving up a run. And eventually that second batter did end up crossing the plate when Ottavino decided to give up the rest of the game. So, but that was a pretty spectacular look like maybe Patrick Sandoval. Now wait a minute. It says here that they're doing another mound visit, but yet it doesn't look like they've switched. It doesn't look like they've switched pitchers. So maybe perhaps he might finish out the game here.
Why not?
They did switch it out. Their closer Raisel Iglesias is coming out for the final out.
Yeah,
against Josh Donaldson. So that is the line officially for Patrick Sandoval today. 8 2/3 innings, one hit given up, one walk, 13 strikeouts for the LA Angels. And Raisel Iglesias is going to come on and hopefully finish things off for the Angels here. Now, Starling Marte of the Marlins, there was talks that maybe he would sign a contract extension. Apparently, that is not happening, as talks have broken off between him and the Marlins. They are predicting that he will be acquired by the Houston Astros, from what it says here. As well, Jesus Aguilar of the Marlins, they're predicting that he will go to the Brewers. CJ Cron of the Rockies, prediction is that they're going to send him to the Padres. This next one, though, is very intriguing to me because they have the Red Sox acquiring former Red Sox killer Jonathan Scope of the Detroit Tigers, who he used to play for the Baltimore Orioles. A power-hitting first baseman who can also play second base, and that's probably the one thing that they've been missing this season is that Bobby Dalbec at first base is very inconsistent. So bringing in somebody like Jonathan Scope would definitely provide an upgrade at first base for the Red Sox here. And it looks like there is trouble in that Angels game. A double by Josh Donaldson has now made this a one-run game. So now the official line for Sandoval. Sandoval does get charged with that run that was at second. So 8 2/3 innings, one hit, which ended up being the run, one walk, and 13 strikeouts for an ERA of 3.52. Adam Frazier of the Pittsburgh Pirates, they have him going to the White Sox. And as far as the Minnesota Twins are projected to be major sellers this year. However, the only player right now that they have leaving the Twins is Andrelton Simmons, their shortstop, who they're predicting is going to go to the Cincinnati Reds. But also on the market are Byron Buxton, Josh Donaldson, Jose Berrios, and Taylor Rogers. And the Rangers, the only Ranger that is looks like he's going to be on the move is Ian Kennedy, who they're predicting will go to the Toronto Blue Jays. Charlie Morton of the Braves, they have him going to the Tampa Bay Rays. Eduardo Escobar of the Diamondbacks, they have him going to the Brewers. And this is kind of interesting because they have Max Scherzer as one of the potential options for the trade market this year. They have him staying with the Nationals at age 36. Which is kind of surprising, even though he is still pitching. Even though he is still pitching good, the Nationals are 500, and you would think that they would want to trade. They would want to trade some players, but not according to this prediction. This prediction sheet here. Now, while we did have the MLB draft take place last week. This week, actually, the last 2 days, we have had the NHL draft.
Yes.
But the NHL draft wasn't really the story. What was the story was all of – I'm sure you heard about the gigantic flurry of trades that took place yesterday, Lou, around the league.
Yes.
Figured, why not? Why don't we just start with probably the biggest crack smoking one of them all? The Chicago Blackhawks acquiring Seth Jones from the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Uh-huh.
The full trade goes as follows. The Blackhawks, they get Seth Jones along with the 32nd overall pick in this year's draft, which already happened, obviously. As well as a sixth-round pick next year. The Blue Jackets, they get Adam Bockvist, first and second-round picks for this year's draft, which I think the first-round pick was like the 9th overall or 11th overall, something like that,
yeah.
and a first-round pick next year. And that if that pick next year is a top two pick, then it becomes a 2023 first round pick instead.
Right.
And this isn't even the, you know, the most puzzling thing about this deal. The most puzzling thing is Chicago then signed Seth Jones to a monster extension of 8 years, $76 million for a guy, for a defenseman who had 5 goals and 23 assists this year. Now, I understand numbers are meant to be lower for defensemen, but I looked at some of the analytics that came along with this trade, and he was basically ranked around the same area as Rasmus Ristolainen, formerly of the Buffalo Sabres. Now, maybe they're hoping that maybe Seth Jones goes back to being the elite defenseman he once was. but I'm not sure I would have given him an 8-year, $76 million deal with this.
No.
I mean, maybe we would see what would have happened if he had played a full season, a full 82-game season, instead of it being shortened to 56 games. But, you know, that's actually kind of interesting. I should see what he was on pace to do for the full season. But regardless, it's just not. It's not a contract that I would give somebody like him. He's going to be making close to $10 million per year. And he's not even considered to be one of the best defensemen in the league. So what do you think about this deal, Lou? What do you think about this deal, Lou?
I think he's worth that kind of money. I think it was a waste. So it was like, what you got yourself into?
And plus, technically, the Blackhawks are actually giving up on a young player like Adam Bockvist, who.
And what have the Blackhawks done in recent years? Nothing.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't really done anything except for that scandal in 2010 that has just been uncovered. That we had talked about previously on the show here. And more attention is being brought to that, actually, in recent weeks. But ever since then, the Blackhawks haven't really done anything. I would think that maybe perhaps this is their way of trying to go on one more potential cup run, but it's going to be hard to do that when you don't have Corey Crawford. And bringing in Seth Jones, that's basically their Duncan Keith replacement, because Duncan Keith is no longer a member of the Blackhawks. So, okay, that's your Duncan Keith replacement, but you're going to need more pieces if you think you're going to contend for the Cup this year, especially considering that this year the divisions and the conferences are all going to go back to the old way that it was before COVID. Now, speaking of, we're going to get to the other trades in a minute, but speaking of controversies,
yes,
there was one prospect who had requested that no team pick him due to sex charges that he had faced in Sweden, as well as a subsequent fine that he had faced due to, I think it was, he had some sort of sexual encounter with a woman over there, and he ended up taking pictures of her without her consent and sending them to different teammates, I guess, or something. I forget the exact thing, but it was somewhere around those lines. Now he had sent out a statement requesting that no team, that every team pass on him and allow him to re-enter the draft next year. Instead, Montreal decided with the 31st pick of the NHL draft in the first round to take Logan Mailloux, despite all these charges that he has. And they immediately released a statement, which honestly, it looked like a prepared statement. They immediately released a statement after a whole bunch of outcry by not just fans of the NHL, but their own fans in Montreal. They released a statement by saying, by drafting prospect Logan Mailloux with a 31st overall pick, the Montreal Canadiens organization not only selected a promising hockey player, but also a young man who recently admitted to making a serious mistake. The Canadiens are aware of the situation and by no means minimize the severity of Logan's actions. Logan understands the impact of his actions. His recent public statement is a genuine acknowledgement of his poor behavior and the first step on his personal journey. We are making a commitment to accompany Logan on his journey by providing him with the tools to mature and the necessary support to guide him in his development. We are also committed to raising awareness among our players about the repercussions of their actions on the lives of others. And ever since they made this pick, they have been basically getting raked over the coals of the hotbed of hell, essentially, for making this pick. And honestly, rightfully so, because this is already bad press for them right off the get-go. So I want to get your thoughts on this, Lou, because, you know, you had a player, you had a prospect that already told teams not to draft him and allow him.
Well, I think I can understand that. I mean, because his reputation is now shot to hell anyway. So why make it even worse? Okay,
yeah,
I'm good for the full duration of the night.
Perfect. That's great. That's great to hear.
Yeah, I got the night off from the other show.
Oh, okay. Now,
yeah,
Logan Mailloux. Logan Mailloux, he did play for, or he was going to play for the London Knights. He played over in Sweden this past year due to COVID. Appeared in 19 games. Then again, over there in Sweden, I think it's like a 20-game season or something. He had 7 goals and 8 assists for 15 points. But when he was previously in the GOJHL, which is, I guess, slightly below the Canadian Hockey League, he had 18 goals and 50 assists back in 2019-2020 when he was 17 years old. So he is a skilled young prospect, but, you know, who just happened to make a very piss-poor decision to do what he did. However, this is, considering the fact that the NHL is one of those many sports leagues that always talked about fighting, you know, sexual assault, domestic violence, and stuff like that. It's a really bad look to have one of your teams draft somebody immediately after they requested that every team pass on them this year. So what are your thoughts, Lou, on the Canadiens deciding to draft Logan Mailloux, even with all of this, even with all of the backlash that they're receiving?
Yeah, that does present a problem. I mean, I don't blame him for not wanting for him to be taken, because, you know, with all the press that's going to, you know, surrounded by him, you know, it's such, you know, for a young person to handle like that, and I don't think he wants to be, you know, treated like that. But on the other hand, you know, he made a mistake, and, you know, the Montreal is looking to overlook it, and they didn't want to take him. So you have to look at, you know, that way as well. I mean, you know, but I think in his own right, I think he made the right decision, because who needs that kind of bad publicity anyway? You know, he's just saving, I think he's just trying to save his own neck.
Yeah, but, you know, at the same time, it sounded like he would want to enter next year's draft in order to show people that, because he knew that situation would probably arise, you know, that it would probably come out if he had not made a statement about it previously.
Hell yeah.
He knew that eventually it would come out, so honestly, I give him credit for trying to have nobody pick him this year, so that he could mature with another year and maybe potentially show these teams that, you know, he can be a mature as he becomes an adult, that he can be a mature adult and not not do things like he ended up doing over in Sweden. But I understand why the Canadiens did pick him. He is a talented player, but
yes,
you know, they have been under fire from their fans and fans alike all around the NHL ever since making that selection. So yeah, it's not a good look for the Canadiens organization, but obviously they must not give a shit, apparently.
No, they don't.
Now, one other player that was selected, Luke Hughes, the brother of Jack Hughes, is now joining his brother on the New Jersey Devils. I think it was the fourth overall pick in this year's draft. He currently has a commitment to the University of Michigan, so I don't know if he will skip his commitment and instead go potentially straight to the NHL, or if the Devils will skip on signing him, because I believe NHL teams do have 3 years, I think, to sign their prospects after their draft year. So maybe or maybe not, Luke Hughes may or may not sign with the Devils immediately. Yeah, his little brother, Jack Hughes' little brother, Luke Hughes.
Well, you know, Jack hasn't really been, you know, exactly what the Devils were hoping to be. So I don't know if Luke is going to make any difference. I mean, Jack was all the rage coming in, you know, and he was great in the preseason. But then when his first regular season started, he just dropped off like that in the second year. Well, which was, of course, interrupted. But he hasn't really been, you know, the dominant star the Devils have been looking for. So,
yeah,
I don't know if signing little bro is a bad omen.
Although he did put up a better season this year compared to his first year with the Devils. This year he did improve. He did improve in both goals and assists. He had 11 goals and 20 assists for 31 points, and he was a minus 3 compared to being a minus 26 in his first year with the Devils. His shot percentage
about his IQ,
also
right?
went up. Huh?
You're not talking about his IQ, right? That was a joke?
I'm sorry. Well, technically his hockey IQ, you could say, because plus and minus. You know, when you're talking plus and minus, you could almost talk about hockey IQ.
Yeah.
But he did improve despite playing in 5 less games this year because the NHL, they had it as 56 games. He did make an improvement. So maybe perhaps year 3 will be kinder to him, and maybe you'll start to see Jack Hughes turn into the player that the Devils thought that they would be getting.
The thing is, though, that he did better, but the rest of the team just sucked. So, you know, I like to see a little more balance there where they both don't suck, because, you know, one person is not going to make that team, you know, better. The whole team has to contribute, and unfortunately, the Devils have not done that since they went to the finals in 2012 and lost to the Kings. So, you know, they haven't really done anything in the 9 years since they've been in the playoffs. Okay, they did make the playoffs for 1 year, but they got ousted in the first round. So basically, over the last 9 years, they haven't done crapola.
Yeah, it is very surprising that despite all the players they've had within the last couple of years, that they haven't been able to put together a winning product. But you know, maybe that's more on management as opposed to the players themselves. Because the players, they may have all the talent in the world. Like you take a look at Taylor Hall. You know, Taylor Hall, once he left New Jersey, he ended up going to Arizona, and I mean, he did okay in Arizona, but then once he went to Buffalo, he absolutely sucked. Then he goes to Boston.
So is Buffalo.
And all of a sudden, it seems like his career has been rejuvenated with him joining Boston.
Yeah, they joined Buffalo.
So it's entirely possible that it may be more on the management of the Devils as opposed to the actual players themselves.
Possible. I just don't see how that, you know, management could be a problem. You have so much good talent, and yeah, it goes to waste, you know, when you have a team like that. You know, I just find it very baffling.
Yeah. Well, you know, certain players don't really gel well together. So,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
you gotta mix and match them, basically.
Right.
But Luke Hughes, who they have acquired, he is a defenseman, and this past year, he split time between the U.S. National Under 18 team, as well as the junior team for the U.S. National team. For the Under 18 team, he had 6 goals and 28 assists. For 34 points in 38 games, and he was a plus 11. For the juniors team, he had 4 goals and 11 assists for 15 points in 18 games, and he was a plus 5. So it is definitely top draft pick talent that he has going number 4 overall. So It makes sense, especially with him now joining his brother. You know, maybe perhaps if he's joining his brother, maybe this might provide more of a jolt to Jack Hughes, to where, I mean, they were used to playing alongside each other, so now maybe perhaps this will provide a jolt to Jack Hughes, and he can perhaps take that next step. Now,
yeah, the Devils can use all the help they can get.
Yeah, exactly. The Devils at this point they need pretty much all the help that they can get when it comes to talent. Now there was for the Islanders, there was one very underrated pick that I was very surprised fell as far as he did, and that was Atu Rautti. If I recall correctly, I believe he fell to the 3rd round, I think. Let me check real quick here. Atu Rautti. He fell to the 2nd round. He was a first round talent, but for some reason he fell all the way to number 52 for the New York Islanders. And honestly, this is a potential sleeper pick of this whole entire draft, as he was the 3rd ranked skater out of all of the European players that are in this draft this year. So it's, I mean, just taking a look at where some people had him ranked, the lowest ranking that he was ranked was 15th overall. Mm-hmm. He was ranked as high as 3rd by NHL Central Scouting. So for some reason he fell. I don't know why this year, but for some reason he fell. They claimed that he would be a guaranteed top 20 pick, but I guess, you know, there must have been it says here he has the tools to be a top line center in the NHL, but at least he will, at the very least, he will be a very good second line center. And he has recently been playing for Karpat of the Liga, where, I mean, technically these numbers don't really burst out here, but in 35 games played, he had 3 goals and 3 assists I mean, you know, like I said, you know, not really bursting out numbers here, but there's a reason why he was, you know, he was looked at as a potential top 20 pick. So
right.
Obviously it's more than numbers when you're looking at a player like him. But we'll see, you know, it could be a potential if he develops correctly. It looks like Lou Lamoriello may have a potential steal in this draft here. There were a whole bunch of trades that went down, obviously, yesterday. One of them in particular, the Philadelphia Flyers, and by the way, this one got bashed by pretty much every single Flyer fan that is on Twitter. Philadelphia acquired Rasmus Ristolainen from the Buffalo Sabres in exchange for a first-round pick in this year's draft, a second-round pick in 2023, and young defenseman Robert Hägg. Ristolainen has one more season left on his six-year, $32 million contract, and then he is eligible for unrestricted free agency at the end of next year. He had 4 goals and 18 points this year with the Sabres. The biggest problem with his game is he has difficulties in his own end.
I see.
So if you're a team that's looking to upgrade on defense, this is not the guy you're going to want to go for. And the Flyers gave up a first-round pick and a future second-round pick, as well as one of their young defensemen in order to acquire him. And you look at Robert Hagg's numbers. He has one more season left. Worth about, I think it's like a $1.6 million cap hit that he has. 2 goals, 5 points this year for the Philadelphia Flyers in 34 games. I mean, granted, the numbers are low, but he probably doesn't make nearly the same amount of mistakes as Ristolainen has done while he was a member of the Sabres. But who knows? Like we mentioned earlier, you know, maybe a change of scenery will help out with certain players in these deals. And this one in particular, this next one, the Flyers, they did kind of redeem themselves a little bit as they acquired Cam Atkinson from the Columbus Blue Jackets in exchange for Jacob Voracek. And it's straight up, no salary retained by either side. They're picking up a guy in Atkinson who once scored 41 goals in a single season for the Blue Jackets. Last year, though, he had 15 goals and 19 assists in 56 games. But back in 2018-2019, he had 41 goals and 28 assists in 80 games. And considering Atkinson had Artemi Panarin to play off of during that season, and he hasn't had a forward of that caliber, though, to play along with since. However, this year he will be playing alongside Claude Giroux on the first line. So
Giroux.
I think it's entirely possible we may see a big comeback come out of Cam Atkinson this year for the Philadelphia Flyers.
Uh-huh.
So what do you think? What do you think, Lou? The Flyers, they make a very questionable decision by overpaying to get Rasmus Ristolainen, but then they get a guy in Cam Atkinson who once scored 41 goals a couple years ago. So do you think that maybe perhaps the Flyers sort of made up for their first blunder of a trade that they made?
Maybe they did, and they've been blundering for quite a few seasons now. Good. It's another one, of course, of the team that the Rangers can't stand. So, you know, I have to go with that. You know how I feel
and
about
also,
that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, the Rangers are – I don't know what the hell is going on with Chris Drury, but, oh, my God. You know what? That reminds me. Let me see if I have it listed here because the Rangers, they acquired Barclay Goodrow from the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I don't know if Drury was smoking crack or what, but this has to be one of the most asinine contract extensions I've seen ever get handed out. And this is different because Goodrow is a fourth-line player. You know, it's not like he's a top-level talent. He's a fourth-line player. Hang on. So, yeah, he was acquired for a seventh-round pick in next year's draft by from the Tampa Bay Lightning. They signed him to a six-year extension worth $3.6 million per year. And he scored 6 goals and 14 assists on the fourth line for the Tampa Bay Lightning this past year. I'm sorry, but no. Who the hell is going to sign a fourth liner to a six-year deal?
You must be joking.
To me, Lou, this makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
No.
From the Rangers' perspective.
Especially when you smoke that weed, that's what happens.
It's not like he's a young player. He's an unrestricted – he would have been an unrestricted free agent this year. So it's not like he's a young player. I mean, yeah, it's not like he's in his 30s. He's still in his 20s, but, you know, he's past the time of unrestricted free – he's 28 years old. So he's no longer a restricted free agent.
That's not old. You're for hockey.
No, but, restricted free agency ends at 26. So, you know, so he technically wasn't a restricted free agent anymore. He's been an unrestricted free agent for a couple of years. And I'm sorry, but, you know, I'm not giving a career fourth liner a six-year contract. It's just not happening unless it's less than what he's making on this deal, which is $3.6 million. For a guy that's putting up 20 points a season, I'm sorry, I'm not paying that. I'm not paying that type of contract to a player who...
No.
I mean, maybe you could potentially see him on the third line, but honestly, I don't really see him as being a third line talent.
No.
Oh, but actually, you know what? Since we're on the Rangers, they were another questionable decision that made you say, "What the hell are you guys doing?" They sent off Pavel Buchnevich to the St. Louis Blues in exchange for Sammy Blaze, who by the way is either a fourth liner or a depth player for the Blues. So they get Sammy Blaze and a second round pick in next year's draft for Pavel Buchnevich, who A, is a restricted free agent with arbitration rights, and B, he scored 20 goals and 48 points last year for the Rangers and is considered to be a top six forward. They just got worse with this deal.
Yeah.
And, I mean, yeah, okay, you got a second-round pick for next year's draft. That's fine. But Sammy Blaze, he literally just got career highs in goals and points this year with 8 goals and 15 points. He's a fourth-line player. I mean, if the Rangers were looking to improve their fourth line, fine, by all means. You got Goodrow and you got Sammy Blaze. You're set for life now
or at least
the next couple of years. But, I mean, Blaze, in 119 career games in the NHL, Blaze has only 35 points. and you just traded a top six forward for this guy and a second round pick in next year's draft. I'm sorry, but in my opinion, I would think that the price should have been a lot higher.
Yes.
For somebody like Buchnevich.
Yes, yes.
I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Lou?
I mean, there are moves that make sense, and there are moves that are just ridiculous, and that is one that does not compute well.
It boggles my mind. I mean, maybe it has something to do with the salary cap or something. You know, maybe New York felt that they wouldn't be able to re-sign Buchnevich to the contract that he's looking for, and they probably would have had to trade him anyways. But I just don't understand it. I do not get the return. I mean, there is one other return, actually, that is more questionable. With the Buffalo Sabres, they acquired goaltender Devin Levi and a first-round pick in next year's draft from the Florida Panthers in exchange for young stud Sam Reinhart. Yeah, the Panthers just got a whole lot better with this deal. Even though Levi was a standout in the World Juniors, posting a .75 goals against average and a 96.4 save percentage with Team Canada, he's still a seventh-round draft pick in the NHL draft last year.
Yeah.
So basically, the Buffalo Sabres acquired a first-round pick and a seventh-round pick in exchange for one of their best players in Sam Reinhart. As Reinhart had 25 goals and 40 points for the Sabres this past year. So, you know, it's just, I don't know if it's the fact that teams are sort of feeling pressure with free agency coming up to try and either come to an agreement with these players or try to
take all the time.
For whatever they can get.
Yeah.
I just don't know, you know, what, I mean, yeah, maybe if this Levi kid can translate his success from the World Juniors into his professional career, then yeah, maybe Buffalo might have their goaltender of the future here. But I mean, you have a kid in Sam Reinhart who's improving year after year. I would have thought you would get at least a little bit more out of this deal. I hear that Frank Vetrano apparently was supposed to be part of the deal, but apparently got taken out at the last second, I guess. So the deal does stand as Devin Levi and a first round pick next year in exchange for Sam Reinhart. And plus, you have to also talk about the possibility that the Sabres may not even have Jack Eichel next year.
Yeah, I think it's time to go anyway.
Because Jack Eichel is apparently on the trade block.
I think it's time for Eichel to go.
Oh, I think it's a foregone conclusion that the experiment that they've done with Eichel in Buffalo just isn't working out. So
no.
it's only a matter of time before he gets shipped off somewhere. Now, the question is, where will he get shipped off to? Obviously, we don't know at this point. There are many teams that are linked to him. The Seattle Kraken, believe it or not, who just had their expansion draft. They are linked to him. The Vegas Golden Knights are linked to him. There's quite a few teams that are linked to him. Obviously, the big thing is you're going to have to take on his massive contract to begin with. So,
yes,
you know, there's definitely a lot of things to take into account when you're talking about a potential Jack Eichel acquisition.
Yes.
But speaking of the Seattle Kraken, did you watch the expansion draft at all?
No, I didn't watch the expansion draft, but I did see, I did manage to catch a little bit of the draft.
Now, it's a little weird because the we saw the expansion draft, how it went down when they had, when they had the Vegas Golden Knights. And the Vegas Golden Knights, you saw them make selections. You saw them select quite a few big names, and real impact players. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury, to name one of them, Jonathan Audi-Marchessault, who was really starting to come into his own, Riley Smith. You know, there were quite a few big names and promising names that Vegas had selected for their expansion team. However, I take a look at this Seattle team and I'm just kind of shaking my head like, what the hell are you guys thinking?
Yeah.
I mean, first off, I'd say probably the biggest name that I'm seeing on this list. Well, actually, no, there are a few big names, but a lot of these players, it really seemed like they went more along the lines of a prospect draft as opposed to, people that are going to actually actively contribute right away.
Yes.
I mean, some of the notable names here, they did take Jordan Eberle of the New York Islanders. So that weakens the Islanders a little bit by taking away one of their best scorers. So I understand that pick. I understand the pick of Vitek Vanacek from the Washington Capitals, as clearly his stock rose big time after their main goaltender Ilya Samsonov got injured this year, and Vanacek basically carried the team for pretty much most of the season. Vince Dunn, I kind of understand for St. Louis because he was on the outs when it comes to their defensive core. Mark Giordano of the Calgary Flames, he was basically Giordano has basically been a loyal player for the most part. I believe he's only been a Calgary Flame for pretty much his entire career.
Yes.
And now he's a member of the he was the captain of the Calgary Flames after Jerome McGinley left. And now he's a member of the Seattle Kraken. And for all we know, he may become the captain for the Kraken now.
Yeah.
So, they did have a little bit of veteran leadership with some of their picks. They did get Adam Larson, who was one of the assistant captains for the Edmonton Oilers. Jeremy Lauzon of the Boston Bruins. I'm so pissed off that they didn't go with Jacob Zboril and instead they went with Jeremy Lauzon.
All right.
That's a big loss. That's a big loss for Boston's defensive core. They also took Yanni Gourde of the Tampa Bay Lightning, probably one of their biggest scorers of this past year. So that's a huge acquisition for the Seattle Kraken. But a lot of these players, they're more like third-line players, maybe depth players, the rest of the picks, that is. They're more third-line or depth players, that it's – you would almost think that maybe perhaps you could potentially find them on the free agent market. I mean, it's just weird with how they've with how they put together their team. Their goaltending tandem.
Yes.
They will have Vitek Vanacek, and they will have Chris Driedger of the Florida Panthers as their goaltending tandem. So, I mean, that's not a bad goaltending tandem for them. I think Vanacek will probably do well. He may have to stand on his head a couple of games, but that's what he did actually this year for Washington. So,
right.
I think Seattle, they're going to be in the Western Conference, right?
Pacific Division, yes. But as a result, next year, the Phoenix Coyotes are moving to the Central Division, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, that doesn't really make any sense at all, because they've always been in the Pacific, haven't they?
Yeah, which makes sense. Of course, if you want to be geographically screwed up, be my guest.
Yeah, you know, I don't understand some of these some of the things that they've.
It's Detroit all over again.
For many years, they're in the Western Conference.
And I'm like, Detroit is in the West. Where are they West up?
Yeah.
Obviously, who aligned these leagues actually flunked U.S. geography. Yeah, I would think so.
You know what? This just came up. I can't believe I forgot about this. What do you think? We're gonna jump over to football a little bit, over to college football.
Yeah.
What do you think of Texas and Oklahoma jumping over to the SEC?
I don't know. I think they're pulling barrel for the Big 12. I think, you know, it's better rivalries. I think they're looking for a lot of trouble going to the SEC, going against those teams. You know, it's like when Rutgers, you know, moved to the Big 10. Are we going to see another one? Are we going to see another of that? Where it's going to be just like, you know, a shit fest every week. I think they should be better off where they are. Some things are just barely untouched.
One of the biggest things, though, to keep in mind is that the SEC is much more different than the Big 12. SEC is probably one of the toughest conferences to be a part of. So
yeah, that's why I don't think I want to see them go.
You know, Texas and Oklahoma, they may have had success in the Big 12, but once you get to the SEC, it's a completely different ballgame. Having to face Alabama, having to face teams like Alabama, LSU, Georgia, you know, Ole Miss, and Texas A&M. You know, there's a whole different level of competition over in the SEC. And I don't know. This could be a potential big mistake that they're making here. And actually, it says here that the Big 12 is considering increasing revenue shares for both Texas and Oklahoma in order to prevent them from leaving for the SEC.
Yeah, don't be an idiot. It wouldn't make any sense for you to join the other conference.
And it says here that obviously each school gets their share of the revenue payouts every year. They're planning on trying to bump the revenue share to about $56 million for both Texas and Oklahoma, which will mean that the other eight schools would have their shares decreased in order to cover the cost. Now, Big 12 schools, they currently make around $37 million per year thanks to the conference's media rights agreement, which includes bowl games and the NCAA tournament. But now you're looking at a potential $19 million increase just to keep Oklahoma and Texas in the Big 12. And it says here that SEC schools, they currently make around $44 million per year from their media rights agreement. However, that number could increase to The number could increase to over 60 million if Texas and Oklahoma join their conference.
Hey. Well, I still think it'd be a big mistake.
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely a big mistake, I believe, for Texas and Oklahoma if they decide to leave the Big 12, because they're going to find out that having to face SEC teams two times a year, you're probably, whatever success you were having over in the Big 12, you're probably not going to replicate that in the SEC.
No, and it ruins the rivalry anyway.
Yeah, but, you know, it's just, it's sort of like take Clemson, for example. Like, if you were going to have Clemson move out of their conference and join the SEC, you wouldn't be seeing Clemson versus Alabama in the national title game.
No.
You know, it's just, sometimes you got to, I mean, maybe this is a way of maybe perhaps allowing other schools to shine in the Big 12, but you got to make a smart decision here. And
yeah,
honestly,
this is
probably one of the stupidest decisions that they could make if they decide to leave the Big 12.
If I commit suicide,
you know, maybe perhaps this goes through, maybe it falls apart. But, right now it looks like they're dead set basically on switching conferences.
Yeah. I assume they're leaving because they think they can get more money, correct?
Yeah, they would get
in the SEC they would get
$60 million every year due to the revenue share.
Every year?
Yeah, due to the revenue share.
And despite the fact they'll get their ass kicked, okay.
Yeah, so they would technically be making more money compared to what they're making right now. So,
but your quality of play would be awful.
Yeah, exactly. The quality of play, you know, the...
Not worth it.
It would be an increase of $23 million, but you would be more than likely getting your asses kicked. And you would have to perform at a top level every single game against SEC level talent. I mean, when you think about it, there is a reason why SEC schools have the most draftees.
Yes, I think I figured that out.
So,
well, you asked me, because the same thing with Rutgers. They moved to the Big Ten, and what have they done since they moved to the Big Ten? Hardly anything at all. Like I said,
exactly.
Big mistake, and this is just a repeat of this. Stupid is stupid.
Exactly.
Does.
So, yeah, and apparently it says here that this deal has been discussed for more than 6 months, apparently, behind the scenes. And it's only just coming out now.
As I always said, more money is not going to make your team better. Just ask Rutgers.
But,
I mean, they
have
more money, and what have they done? Nothing.
Nope. But, yeah, for some reason, Bill Belichick still selects players out of Rutgers. I don't know why. But,
yeah.
he knows more than I do. But,
more than
you know,
put together.
Going back to the Seattle Kraken players, you know, I'm taking a look at some of these players, and they selected a guy from Buffalo who only played in 10 games this year. One of the players they selected from Detroit, he's appeared in 104 games since he was drafted 20th overall in 2016. So, okay, that's maybe he has been shuffling back and forth, though, between the NHL and AHL, though. So he is more of a prospect, if anything. Yeah, you see, this is what's weird about the Seattle Kraken is that they drafted more prospects as opposed to actual impact players with this expansion draft. And this was done by the person running the Seattle Kraken is Ron Francis, who originally was in charge of the Carolina Hurricanes. And he ended up taking Morgan Geeky, a center from the Hurricanes, who he originally drafted in the 2017 entry draft in the third round. I just got to say, from some of these picks that I'm looking at, I mean, one of these guys only has played 28 career NHL games, 27 years old. It's like, I understand some of these picks, but some of the other ones, like, what the hell are we doing here?
Yeah.
You know, it's like these guys have had limited playing time. And maybe it's a case of, you know, okay, maybe we can uncover something that all of their former teams never saw in them. But I'm kind of wondering if maybe perhaps they're trying to recreate what Vegas did.
It's possible.
With their picks. But honestly, I just don't see it. I just don't see it with this group. I mean, a lot of these players, the exception of a few, a lot of these players look more like depth players as opposed to actual impact players. Like, I'm not looking at Seattle right now and saying, oh, this is going to be, you know, this is going to be a contender for the Stanley Cup. I'm not looking at this team like I did Vegas.
Right.
I think it's going to take quite a while for Seattle to.
Yeah, I was saying the same thing on my show. Of course, did my group agree with me? No, of course not. They think, oh, you never know. No, I honestly, because remember, when Vegas came in, they brought in a lot of veteran players who have been on Stanley Cup teams, and they knew how to win. Here, I don't see it with the Kraken.
Yeah, no, you're not even really seeing that much out of the Kraken's picks. And considering, hang on, let me see. Hopefully they've updated the. The divisions.
Right.
So. Well, no, they still have the old. They still have the old divisions up, but I would assume that if they're going to be in the Pacific Division, I mean, you're looking at teams like San Jose, L.A., Vegas. Vegas is going to be in there.
Yeah.
Okay, this was the last Pacific Division before they ended up realigning. You had Vegas, you had Edmonton, Vancouver, mm-hmm. Calgary, Arizona, Anaheim, LA, and San Jose.
Right.
I'm sorry, but this team is not getting past Vegas. This team isn't getting past Edmonton.
No. So
maybe they'll get past Calgary. They're not going to get past Vancouver, especially with Vancouver acquiring Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Connor Garland yesterday. Yeah, no shot in hell is this team getting past Vancouver. You know, maybe they can get past Calgary with them losing Mark Giordano.
Two.
And Arizona, I mean, Arizona, they're going to be a rebuilding team this year, so it's not, they're not going to have to worry about – well, you said Arizona's moving back to the Central Division, though, right?
Next year.
Oh, okay, next year. All right, so
– still, I don't think it makes a lot of sense for the middle of Central.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Then that means the Pacific Division will have 9 teams this year.
Yeah, but I think they want. I don't think they want to overload on the division. So I get the reason why they do it, but still, I mean, it's just kind of stupid.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird when you take a look at the when you take a look at how the division looks right now, assuming
yes.
that they go back to assuming they go back to the way it was before. Before the division realignment due to COVID.
Yes.
I'm finding it hard to see a successful Seattle season with this division lineup right now.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to get absolutely hammered this year. I mean, they already had the second pick this year in the draft. It's very possible. You may see a repeat with them getting another top draft pick next year as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I really just don't see the same success as they did, as you know, they did with Vegas. I just don't see it here. A lot of people think I was nuts for saying that, but I don't see it. I mean, not everybody's going to be a success story like the Golden Knights.
Yeah, no, Vegas was a completely different story because Vegas teams – you know, when the expansion draft first started, teams weren't really sure how things were going to go. So they weren't sure, you know, who they should protect, who they should expose
right.
Like for example, back then, Montreal, they didn't expose Carey Price like they did this year to the expansion
right.
draft. Now, luckily, they took a chance, and Carey Price, he ended up having surgery, so he's not going to be ready for the start of next season. But they took a chance that hopefully Seattle wouldn't choose him, which they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you know, I'm just – I don't really see Seattle – being able to replicate what Vegas did in their first year. You would have to see some sort of upside in some of these players that they've gotten. And looking at some of these players who are basically third line or fourth liners or maybe depth players on other teams, most of them, I should say, most of them are third line or fourth line depth players on the teams that they were drafted from. I mean, if you put them now on a potential first or second line team, I just don't see them putting up much more production compared to what they did on their previous teams. Who knows though? You know, maybe they'll surprise us. Maybe they'll surprise us this upcoming season, but I doubt it.
Well, yeah, I heard that too, but I don't see it.
I would be very surprised. Now, one thing that really surprised me was the Detroit Red Wings. Now, here's the thing. The Hurricanes, they had a rookie goaltender named Alex Nedeljkovic, who put up such a stellar season this year where he finished third in voting for the Calder Trophy for Rookie of the Year.
Yes.
And it looked like Carolina had finally found their goaltender of the future. You know, that he was going to be somebody that was going to – he would be their first franchise goalie, quite frankly, since they had Cam Ward. However – apparently he asked for, I think it was like anywhere from $3 to $5 million per year in free agency coming up, and they were only willing to offer him $1.5 million for a goaltender who put up a record of 15-5-3 in the regular season this year. And you're going to lowball him with that offer? I'm sorry, but it's no wonder. They then decided to trade him to the Detroit Red Wings. This is an absolute steal by Steve Yzerman with the Red Wings, because the Hurricanes, they acquired the rights to unrestricted free agent goalie Jonathan Bernier and a third-round pick this year in exchange for Nedeljkovic, who not only had that record with a 93.2 save percentage and a 1.9 goals against average this year, but he also played in the playoffs this year with, I think it was a 3-2 record in net. So he has playoff experience in his very first year in the league after playing a couple of years in the AHL. And you mean to tell me that a difference of $1.5 million, you wouldn't pay him $1.5 million more per year compared to what you were originally offering him? I'm sorry, but this is probably the biggest blunder that Carolina, just when you thought Carolina was taking steps forward, they now take a couple of steps back with this move, because I'm sorry, but Jonathan Bernier, he's nowhere near the goaltender he once was.
Yeah.
He just isn't. I mean, Bernier, you know, he used to be a top goalie for the LA Kings and also for the Toronto Maple Leafs at one point. And I don't know, it seems like ever since he's gotten older, he has just completely regressed, even though he's 32 years old, which technically, I mean, he should be in his prime right now, and right now he's,
yes.
You know, he's just in limbo right now. And he joins a team that now has Peter Mrazek and James Reimer as their current goaltenders, who are unrestricted free agents. Bernier, he's also an unrestricted free agent. So Carolina, technically, they have no goaltenders right now. They have nobody who's actually signed. But Nedeljkovic, he did sign a 2-year, $6 million deal with the Detroit Red Wings. So he is officially under contract. And Detroit doubled down in the draft here, and they took probably the top goaltender prospect, Sebastian Costa, out of Edmonton. With the 15th overall pick in the first round this year, so Detroit's starting to make moves. We saw what Yzerman did to transform Tampa Bay into the juggernaut that they are right now. Wait until he gets done with Detroit. All right, what are your thoughts, Lou? You know, if you have a rookie goaltender like Nedeljkovic, who put up a stellar season for his first year. Granted, he was a backup goaltender, but he put up a stellar season for his very first season. Wouldn't you be willing to give him the money that he wants, especially if you're looking at a potential goaltender of the future?
I say he'd be worth it, yes.
But now instead they have more questions now, because they don't know who their starter is going to be, when it probably could have been Nedeljkovic if they had just signed him. I don't know. There's been needless to say, maybe it's draft fever or something this year, but there has been a lot of questionable decisions that have been made around the draft this year. Some other free agent news. Cale Makar, he did $4 million contract extension with the Colorado Avalanche. Now, compared to the Seth Jones contract, this one actually makes sense. 20 goals.
All right.
He had 44 points in 44 games last year for the Avalanche, and he has 94 points in 101 career NHL games. And he was also voted to his first All-Star team this year. This actually makes sense.
Yes.
To give $9 million per year to a player of Makar's caliber. Seth Jones, on the other hand, he isn't the player that he once was. So that contract with the Blackhawks is more confusing compared to this one. Also, Taylor Hall, he has officially signed a four-year deal to remain with the Boston Bruins, an average annual value of $6 million. So it's 4 years, 24 mil, the full contract. Apparently, he decided, he said in his interview with the media after it was announced that he decided to stay with the Boston Bruins after five or six games of playing with them. He said that perhaps there is more stability in Boston compared to any of the other teams he's played with in his career.
Nice.
And he did sort of get his game back, as with Boston, he had 8 goals and 14 points in 16 games with the Bruins after he was acquired from Buffalo. He also had 3 goals and 5 points in 11 games during the Stanley Cup playoffs. Now, assuming that Boston can re-sign David Krejci to a new deal, as that's really what not just rejuvenated Taylor Hall's career, but it also rejuvenated David Krejci, as Krejci was on a bit of a downhill slope ever since he had been partnered up with Jake DeBrusk on the second line. He had really been in more of a land of limbo, if you want to call it, like where he wasn't getting the points. He wasn't getting the points that you normally see out of him in a regular season with actual liners that he can actually work with. Now with Taylor Hall, that's a completely different story, as all of a sudden that second line seemed to start working immediately as Taylor Hall joined the team. So so far. It has worked out for the Boston Bruins, and with them now locking in Taylor Hall and locking in Brandon Carlo to his six-year deal, it looks like things are moving along. And apparently, the Bruins, they have been linked still to a couple of players this offseason. They have been linked to Ryan Suter, who just got bought out by the Minnesota Wild. And considering they are looking to upgrade their left-handed defenseman, it would kind of make sense for them to go after a player like Suter, even though he is 36 years old. He can still put up quality minutes. And, I mean, I think as we saw with Zdeno Chara this year, the Bruins made the wrong decision to let go of Zdeno Chara. And yet he put up quality minutes this year with the Washington Capitals. So maybe perhaps they have learned their lesson. Apparently they're also connected to Christian Dvorak of the Arizona Coyotes, as apparently they had conversations with the Coyotes around potentially acquiring Dvorak. They've also had conversations with the Vancouver Canucks of potentially trading for goaltender Braden Holtby with the status of Tuukka Rask up in the air. So there's quite a few things that are starting to bubble in the NHL right now. So it's I think it's going to be considering how trade season has already started this off season, I think it's going to be a pretty wild free agency period. And I mentioned earlier that the Vancouver Canucks acquired Connor Garland and Oliver Ekman-Larsson from the Coyotes. And this is what boggles me is the fact that the Coyotes actually agreed to pay at least $1.2 million per year of each of Oliver Ekman-Larsson's remaining years on his deal, which is like I think he has six seasons left. Six seasons left, and he carries a cap hit of $8.25 million. So they're paying 12% of that contract, which will be about $1.2 million per year. So basically, Vancouver is on the hook for $7 million per year, essentially, for Oliver Ekman-Larsson's deal. And they get a quality player in Connor Garland. The Coyotes, in return, they receive Antoine Roussel, Jay Beagle, Louis Erickson, the ninth overall pick of this past weekend's draft, a second-round selection next year, and a seventh-round pick in 2023. So overall, I think this is a pretty solid deal for the Vancouver Canucks. I am kind of shocked, though, that considering some of the players that they sent over, honestly, I honestly think that Louis Erickson was more of a salary dump considering he has a $6 million cap hit. Antoine Roussel didn't really put up much, as did Jay Beagle. It's really weird. It's like they traded a whole bunch of fourth liners in exchange for Connor Garland, who was probably the best player on the Coyotes last year. And they also acquired Oliver Ekman-Larsson, which, I mean, quite frankly, he's been basically a gigantic black hole for the Coyotes ever since they signed him to that massive deal. So this seems like it was more of a way for the Coyotes to basically get out of that contract. So what are your thoughts, Lou, on this mega deal that went down yesterday?
Just another mega deal. Yeah, well, we'll just have to see what happens in the end of it. You know, every time you get a mega deal, you think it's going to go right, but, you know, there's something that always screws it up.
Yeah.
You expect better.
Yeah, you do. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, keep in mind, he used to be one of the top defensive prospects coming out of the year he was drafted. You know, he was seen as the next big guy, the next big defensive player to be an elite defenseman in the NHL. And for some reason, his career, like, after the first couple of years, he has just really declined. I don't understand what has gone on with his career to the point of where he is basically turned into a gigantic black hole that everybody wants to stay far away from.
Yeah.
Arizona wasn't done, though, as they also acquired Shane Gostisbehere from the Philadelphia Flyers, as well as a 2022 second round pick and a 2022 seventh round pick, with nothing going back to the Flyers except for salary cap relief. So this was basically the Flyers basically gave away Gostisbehere for free, essentially. And I don't think we ever really see this. in sports leagues. You know, usually, wouldn't you think, Lou, that there would be somebody going back in return, or maybe at least like a draft pick or something? And instead,
yes,
the Flyers basically gave the Coyotes a second round pick and a seventh round pick in order for Arizona to agree to take this this cap hit off of their hands.
You at least get, you know, something good out of it.
I mean, it's just really weird because you never really see that, you know, when it comes to moves being made. You normally don't see something like that happen. One of the other moves that went down, Columbus, they acquired Jake Bean from the Carolina Hurricanes in exchange for the number 44 pick in the draft yesterday. That pick was originally acquired from Chicago in the Seth Jones trade. So they basically flipped it immediately in order to acquire Jake Bean from the Hurricanes. So Columbus, you know, I got to tell you, with the moves that Jarmo Kekalainen made for the Blue Jackets yesterday, I think it's possible that Jarmo may be looking at another GM of the Year award coming up here. It's entirely possible because he went on a fleece job yesterday, essentially, with some of these moves. Moving over to the NBA, though, we had the NBA Finals where the Phoenix Suns, they had a two-game advantage.
And they choked.
It's like that it's like that line by Michael Corleone. Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in with the Milwaukee Bucks winning the next four straight on the back of Giannis Antetokounmpo, who put up 50 points in Game 6 to win not just his first NBA final, but also NBA Finals MVP for Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, I think is it safe to say that Giannis has officially turned himself into a superstar with this performance in the NBA
Finals?
I don't think so.
I mean, you just won one title so far. I mean, I don't know if you're a superstar yet, so we'll have to wait and see. But I'm just reading something here from a group page, and it's being told by somebody here saying, I'm being told that Jack Eichel to New York Rangers is now imminent. Oh, boy.
Wait, Jack Eichel to the Rangers?
Yes. Yes, I'm reading of a post right now. It's not official. This is coming from a post from a group page. I don't know how accurate it is, but this looks this could be big. Oh, boy. You heard it here first.
Wow!
Folks.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
If this ends up going down, I mean, obviously the Rangers have always
Stanley
been
Cup?
In the conversation. Well, no, I don't know if I'd say Stanley Cup right away, but. I mean, it's a very good start. If you're pairing Panarin up with somebody, assuming they don't give up somebody like Panarin in this deal, if you can pair up Panarin with Eichel and also keep Capo Caco, that's a pretty intimidating first line.
Yes.
And assuming that Eichel is finally able to piece things together and you know, actually be able to gel with his line mates. I think we may you may potentially maybe not a Stanley Cup right away, but I think things will be looking good for the Rangers. Maybe perhaps the rebuild process won't be as big or won't be as long as people may think.
Right.
And actually, not just Jack Eichel, but you would also have Mika Zibanejad potentially still on the team as well.
Zibanejad.
So, you know, there is still a whole bunch of talent on that New York Rangers roster, and you know, like I said, assuming that you see the jump from Alexander Georgiev as well as Igor Shesterkin this year, you could potentially have a pretty good 1-2 goaltender tandem as well. Plus, you saw Adam Fox last year start to develop into an all-star defenseman. You got Libor Hajek coming up from the Hartford Wolfpack. And Ryan Lindgren, you know, he's starting to really develop. You know, plus you still have Jacob Trouba, who you acquired from Winnipeg. You know, there is still a lot of potential with the talent that you have on the New York Rangers roster that you could potentially see a contender start to develop.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it still might be a work in progress, but it won't be nearly the amount of time that you would be waiting for them going through a rebuilding period.
Right.
Now, one of
and
the
dirty
words that I. Yeah. Exactly. That's one
I,
word
I
that
call
nobody,
I call rebuild a dirty word.
Yeah, that's no phrase that anybody wants to hear. Anybody that's a fan of any
yes.
team, regardless.
Yes.
Now I did read that the Rangers they did agree to a buyout with Anthony DeAngelo.
Right.
He is now a free agent, I believe. That's probably one. I don't understand what the hell has happened with DeAngelo ever since. He's been involved in some controversy, I guess.
Yeah, I forget what the controversy was for.
Points, just a season ago with the Rangers. You know, he was one of their best defensemen, and now all of a sudden, he finds himself on the free agent market. So. It sort of seems like, you know, he's one of those players that you know is letting their off the ice controversy, you know, start to affect their play on the ice. But anyways, you know, back to the NBA Finals. You know, when it comes to Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know, the one thing that I had said apart from them having a coach who apparently doesn't know how to make certain adjustments to the game plan, I do remember saying the big X factor potentially for the Milwaukee Bucks was going to be the acquisition of Jrue Holiday, which technically, you know, you could say that Jrue Holiday really transformed that team from a contender into a legitimate threat. So, you know, obviously we saw what ended up happening. Milwaukee, they got past Miami. Miami, I don't know what the hell happened with them this year, but they got past Miami. They snuck past Brooklyn. I still think that if Kyrie wasn't injured, you know, maybe perhaps Brooklyn would have beat Milwaukee in seven games. But
if we thought that was a three, which it should have been, that would have been the difference right there. But no, they had to call it a two. Dumbass.
That's true. That's true. I forgot about that. I forgot about that one.
I wish I would like to forget about
Then they get past Atlanta, and everybody was thinking that it was probably going to be Phoenix that was going to end up winning, but somehow Milwaukee was able to rebound from losing the first two games and winning the next four straight. So
I did not see that coming. I really did not.
No, neither did I, especially with Giannis being injured. But
and Milton wasn't so healthy either.
No, he wasn't. They had some really clutch performances, not just by Giannis, but also from their bench as well. I mean, Bobby Portis put up 16 points in Game 6 from the bench.
If anyone does that well in Chicago.
Yeah, and plus he put up all series long, actually. You know, both him and Pat Connaughton, they put up some pretty big points off of that Milwaukee bench that honestly probably helped with the turnaround of the series. So, you know, it's no wonder that Milwaukee was able to win the series with four straight wins after game two.
Yeah.
I will say though that there was one point in the series, I forget which game it was, if it was game four or game five, that at the NBA really looked like they were trying to get Phoenix, that they were trying to help Phoenix out, because some of the calls that were getting called against Milwaukee, I think it was four, yeah. That some of the calls that they were getting called against Milwaukee were just completely asinine, but Phoenix just wasn't able to capitalize for some reason.
Yeah.
Now we do have another. This could be a potential firework starter here. Obviously, the NBA draft is Thursday. And
yes.
According to Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report, Wizards star Bradley Beal is considering requesting a trade prior to the draft. And one of the teams that is involved as a potential destination for Bradley Beal is the Boston Celtics. They've also named the Philadelphia 76ers, the Golden State Warriors, as prospective teams that will be involved in the pursuit. They even, I believe, they named the New York Knicks as well as a potential option.
Yes, I heard.
So there's the potential that, I mean, obviously Bradley Beal, any deal for Bradley Beal would involve a major return. But, I mean, what do you think? Do you think that potentially a team acquiring Bradley Beal could be a difference maker for certain teams that are looking to take that next step?
It's possible. Yeah, I just wish we know who's looking for him. I mean, you know, Washington didn't really, you know, impress me all that much this year. I'm just wondering how, you know, other teams will, how it will kind of get with other teams. I mean, he is a good player, don't get me wrong. But, you know, he just doesn't have a Washington.
I mean, to think about this. I would sort of imagine Bradley Beal, the impact he would have as sort of like when Kevin Durant joined the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
If he were to join Golden State, assuming that Klay Thompson will stay healthy, you could potentially have another season like the Warriors had when Durant was in town.
Right.
So, obviously, you know, that would be a potential option. The 76ers, I honestly think that, obviously, you know, Ben Simmons would probably be – well, actually, no, Ben Simmons probably wouldn't be in the deal because they have Russell Westbrook anyway, so why the hell would they need Simmons?
They don't.
You know, the 76ers, if you can add another – another star to Embiid, and assuming that Ben Simmons can turn things around, that's a potential piece that could take them to the next step, and maybe perhaps they can finally reach the conference finals. But I don't know. There's, you know, there's definitely different
options.
Yeah, I don't
know either.
I know Golden State, for example, they're dangling the number 7 and number 14 overall picks in an effort to try and acquire another star. You know, whether or not that's going to work. I mean, not only are they dangling those two picks, they're also dangling James
right.
Wiseman, who they just drafted this year, in an effort to try and land another star to join Klay Thompson and Steph Curry.
Right.
So I would think that just based off of some of the teams that I know are going to be involved, I would think that probably Golden State would be at the forefront. I would maybe put Boston as a possibility, but the only way they would have a chance is if they included both Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart in any potential deal. And I'm not sure if they would include both of them.
Right.
That's the only question I have about the Celtics. Otherwise, I do know that Jason Tatum does want to play with Bradley Beal because they were supposed to play together on the Olympic squad this year before Bradley Beal came down with COVID. So there's definitely options for Beal, but it all depends on whether or not he decides to ask for a trade, and it has to be before the draft.
Yes.
Because otherwise it sounds like he's going to, that he will stay with Washington if he doesn't.
Yes.
And it reminds me, the draft is Thursday.
Yep. Yep, the NBA draft is Thursday, and you know, everybody's been saying that Cade Cunningham would be the number one pick.
Yes,
apparently he did not have a good showing with the Detroit Pistons at all. So it has led people to wonder maybe perhaps Detroit might pass on Cunningham because apparently he did not have a good workout whatsoever.
Right.
With Detroit. And obviously that means he would probably fall to Houston. So I don't know. There's the possibility maybe perhaps, although in this recent mock draft that NBA.com has done, They have Jalen Green jumping up to the number two spot. Jalen Green would be the first member of the G League to officially get drafted for a player. A player, instead of going to college, they instead go to the G League. That's now apparently an option. And basically, it sounds like there's the potential that maybe perhaps you might see a couple of couple of question marks at the top of the draft this year. I mean, there's I've heard that Jalen Suggs could potentially go number one overall out of Gonzaga.
Good choice.
You know, I've obviously Cade Cunningham has been the more popular suggestion. But you know, Jalen Green has been thrown around out there. Evan Mobley from UFC has been, or not UFC, USC has been thrown around out there. You know, there's been a whole bunch of different options that have been thrown around. So, you know, I think it's entirely possible that we could have, you know, if Cade really did not impress in that workout like they're claiming, we could have we may need to buckle in for the NBA draft this year, because it may be a bumpy ride.
What were you expecting?
I mean, it wouldn't be a draft, honestly, without without bumps in the road.
Of course, it's a draft for you.
Now, one of the things that's
kind of
interesting,
we plan.
Yeah, but you know, one of the things that's kind of interesting though is they have Moses Moody from Arkansas, a freshman guard out of Arkansas, going to the San Antonio Spurs with the number 12 pick, and this is really, I say this because he had a solid regular year, but once the NCAA tournament came in, he basically completely disappeared.
Why is that?
So I'm kind of – I don't know. I don't know. But he, you know, for a guy who was supposed to be a guy that would put the team on his shoulders – he didn't really show up in the NCAA tournament. And I kind of thought that would affect his draft stock, but apparently he's still a lottery pick, as they have him currently positioned at number 12 to the San Antonio Spurs. Right now, from what I'm looking at, it looks like they have the newest mock draft. They have the Pistons taking Cade Cunningham out of Oklahoma State with the number one pick. Jalen Green from the G League Ignite. They have the Rockets taking him, becoming the first G League player to get drafted. They have the Cavaliers taking Evan Mobley, which would make sense because they do need a big man after losing a whole bunch of their bigs. Jalen Suggs going to the Raptors from Gonzaga. Scotty Barnes from Florida State going to the Orlando Magic. You got Jonathan Kuminga from the G League Ignite going to the Oklahoma City Thunder. James Bonight from UConn apparently is projected to go to the Warriors.
I heard.
That is if you follow this mock draft edit. That is if
I don't
mind
the mock draft, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's there is still a whole lot of a whole lot of different things that can happen. You know, it's, you never really know what a team is thinking.
No, that's what they call it, a mock draft, because they don't know what they're doing anyway.
Yeah. they do have Davion Mitchell from Baylor going to the Orlando Magic. Originally, the pick belonged to the Bulls before the Bulls traded it for Nikola Vucevic this year at the deadline. Franz Wagner from Michigan is projected to go to the Sacramento Kings. You got Keon Johnson from Tennessee projected to go to the Pelicans. Josh Giddey from Australia for the Adelaide 36ers apparently is projected to go to the Charlotte Hornets. Moses Moody from Arkansas to the Spurs. Jalen Johnson from Duke apparently is projected to go to the Indiana Pacers. And they have Kai Jones as the last lottery pick projected to go to the Warriors from the Texas Longhorns. So still, you know, there's a lot of different mock drafts out there. I mean, hell, we saw what happened with baseball's mock draft. Just because certain mock drafts are saying that one team is going to take a certain player, that doesn't mean it's going to happen.
No.
And by the way, this just in the Olympics, Team USA has officially gotten their first gold medal.
Yep.
In swimming, they picked up their first medals on day two. Believe it or not, for the first time in 50 years, the United States did not get a single medal on day one of the Olympics. It's hard to believe, but for the first time in 50 years, according to CNN.
So the first time for 72 Olympics.
But they did pick up the gold and silver medals in swimming in the men's 400-meter individual medley for swimming, obviously.
Yes.
And also, believe it or not, this is the first year that skateboarding is considered an Olympic sport.
I've heard,
and they have a couple of Americans in line for potential medals in this year's Olympics for skateboarding. But heading into today, let's see if I can find. Okay, yeah, here we go. The medal count heading into today. China was basically leading the way with 3 gold medals and 1 bronze medal already. Italy had one gold and 1 silver, as did Japan with 1 gold and 1 silver. The Republic of Korea, they had 1 gold medal and 2 bronze medals. Ecuador, Hungary, Iran, Kosovo, and Thailand all had 1 gold medal apiece. The Russian Olympic Committee, I guess they can't go by Russia. They have to go by the Russian Olympic Committee. They had a silver and a bronze medal, and Serbia also had a silver and a bronze medal. Let's see if I can find, actually, yeah, the updated count here. So the updated count, oh, yeah. The United States has really gained in total medals. The United States now leads after day two here. 1 gold medal, 2 silver medals, and 3 bronze medals for the United States for a total of 6. China right behind them with 5. And then Japan, Australia, and the Republic of Korea, and ROC. I don't know what that stands for. ROC. Does not say, but ROC, those 4 are tied three gold, with three medals. And there's a whole bunch of other countries that I'm not going to name off, but regardless, the United States has come roaring back in day two so far for Olympic medals. So I guess they wanted to give other countries a head start.
Yeah, I think so too.
But and also another thing too is the men's Olympic team for basketball. I believe they have a game at 8 o'clock. I think 8 o'clock Eastern. That is. Let me see. After starting off the way that they have, you know, losing to Nigeria in the exhibition, then losing to Australia, then finally beating Argentina. The Australia game was canceled, or the second Australia game was canceled. They beat Spain just barely. So now they face off against France beginning tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Then on Wednesday, I think, they face Iran at noon. So the quarterfinals are August 3rd. So basically we have to hope that Team USA can win all three games so that they can advance to the quarterfinals. And it looks like the gold medal game is tentatively scheduled for August 6th.
Right, if I'm not mistaken.
So that should be interesting to keep an eye on here.
Yes.
When it comes to the Olympics, hopefully, you know, they can get back on track and, you know, actually compete as a cohesive unit.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, with all they went through with the scheduling this year and whatnot, wasn't even got everybody in for training camp. I wasn't surprised by the four star in the exhibition game, so I kind of expected that. But I think now since they got everybody together, the new acquisitions, I think they're going to be able to be competitive in this tournament that starts tomorrow against France.
Yeah, hopefully, because especially with them not getting Chris Paul. There were a couple of other players, you know, they were supposed to have Bradley Beal, but he had to pull out because of COVID.
Yes.
You know, they are kind of shorthanded when it comes to compared to what talent they could have had. I mean, you know, they originally had James Harden, but Harden ended up pulling out in order to focus on rehab for his injury.
That's more important.
You know, there's the whole – it's just imagine the type of team they could have had, you know, if they end up not being able to get the gold medal this year. Imagine the type of team that they could have had if certain players didn't back out. Yeah.
Well, at least, you know, they didn't back out because of their own choosing. I mean, they backed out for health.
Yeah, for health reasons, or in LeBron's case, LeBron backed for his own choosing. I don't think LeBron was more health. He's more focused on NBA titles as opposed to gold medals. Because I believe, doesn't he have a gold medal anyways now? I'm pretty sure the men's team won gold medals, I think, when they had Kobe and LeBron and all the big stars of the past couple of decades. So But, you know, it's there's still a lot more talent that they could have potentially had if Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and a couple of others didn't back out. Now, this is a bit of well, I shouldn't say shocking because it's not really shocking, but it is breaking news, kind of. According to SportsIllustrated.com's Bill Huber, he is reporting that Las Vegas sportsbooks Aaron Rodgers to retire as early as next week, as multiple sportsbooks, including DraftKings, have removed Packers-based wagers on the belief that Rodgers is going to retire. As training camp starts next week and there are reasons to believe that he will not report to camp. Also, they have broken off contract talks with wide receiver Davante Adams. And considering Rodgers rejected a 2-year extension, and, you know, both of them, they have posted simultaneous pictures of Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, which it basically is signaling that, you know, if Michael Jordan, this being Aaron Rodgers, the MVP of the Packers, if he's not gonna play, okay, then neither will Davante Adams or
exactly.
Scottie Pippen in this situation. I mean, right now it's honestly looking like this looks like it's a much more chaotic situation than the Brett Favre debacle that they had to deal with.
Yeah, we thought that was a debacle.
Yeah. Now you have your MVP, your franchise quarterback, and your number one weapon in Davante Adams, potentially. I wouldn't be shocked if Davante sits out the entire year.
Huh. Yeah, it's possible.
Because, I mean, that's what signs are pointing to right now, that Davante doesn't want to play if Rodgers isn't going to play. And also this week, the NFL announced that if a game cannot be rescheduled, COVID outbreak among unvaccinated players, the game will result in a forfeit for the team with the outbreak.
Have we got a problem? We got a problem.
Yeah, I think that especially this is basically them almost forcing players' hands, like basically forcing players,
yeah,
look, you're going to have, you know, players like DeAndre Hopkins, who now apparently is thinking about potentially not playing this year because he doesn't want to be forced to do something that he doesn't want to do. DeAndre Hopkins, you know, Cole Beasley, he's also spoken out about this. There's a bunch of players that have spoken out about this, and apparently the NFL is basically saying, you know what, we don't give a shit. And it says here that any forfeited games will impact playoff seeding, just like a loss would.
Right.
And it also says that in the event of a forfeit, neither team's players will receive their weekly salary. So basically, if a team forfeits the game, the team they were facing will not get paid also that week. I mean, that sounds kind of bullshit to me when you think about it. You know, why should my team suffer if my team wasn't the one that forfeited? You know? It almost seems to me like the NFL is, I mean, they're clamping down on this, obviously, because of the rise of cases that we're starting to see now all of a sudden. But it's almost like the NFL is pushing this to the point of where, obviously, you know, you're going to have players who have their own beliefs. You know, they don't believe in the vaccine. And, you know, we could potentially see mass players once again decide to opt out and not play the whole season. So what are your thoughts on this, Lou?
Well, look, I mean, no one wants to be forced down their throats to do that. But, you know, I think in the long run, you know, it may be better for them to get vaccinated because, you know, yeah, the effects, you know, can happen. But that's only in the short term. And,
yeah,
you know, sometimes what they're complaining about. I mean, because, you know, yeah, you're going to feel like crap at first probably. I know I will when I get mine. But those are only short-term effects. It's not going to, you know, it's going to do you more good than harm if you do get the vaccine. I don't think players want to lose their paycheck, though, either, if they do decide not to take it. So you have to figure that out, too. Like, let's see. Do I swallow my pride and take it, or do I just suffer? I was like, nah, I don't give a cat's ass. Well,
yeah,
maybe you should think about it. Think of what you're risking if you don't take it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously, every person has a different reaction. I mean, luckily for me, all I had was just a minor headache and you know, some sort of pain in my arm. Basically, that was pretty much it.
That's a very common side effect, I heard.
Yeah, it is. It's very
well,
common.
Yeah, you'll feel pain in your arm, right?
Yeah, but what was weird is the first shot that I had, I felt the pain almost immediately. The second shot, I didn't feel the pain until about 6 to 8 hours afterwards, when I was almost like right about to go to sleep. Actually,
well,
no. Actually,
when I do get,
actually,
I'm gonna play
it. Would have been during
off.
This podcast.
Yeah. When I just plan to sleep off.
Yeah. You know that would kind of make sense. You just got to make sure that when you do get it, that you move your arm around a lot in order to keep it loose, so to speak.
Sure.
You know, because
I think the best thing is
helpful.
Yeah, but I think the best thing to do also probably is to sleep it off, especially if you're going to feel like hell. So, you know, if you sleep it off.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I plan to whenever I get it, because I might get it tomorrow. I don't know yet, but if I do, all I can say is, well, if I sleep it off, maybe I'll feel a lot better.
Yeah, the one thing I should tell you, Lou, when I would notice, at least for the first couple of days afterwards, when I wake up, you're gonna feel your arm to be really sore, like almost as if you slept on your arm or something. For example,
I've done that occasionally.
So, you know, you're gonna feel a little sore getting out of bed. Especially after the first day after you do get the shot.
Oh dear, my running streak is over.
I am just getting this. I'm just getting this news right now. Mika Zibanejad, and this is considering the Rangers, how they've done contracts. Considering how they've done contracts, they might just do this one. Mika Zibanejad apparently on his next deal is asking for $10 million per year from the Rangers.
Uh-oh. That'll be a problem. And I don't know if they're going to give it one. I don't see it happening.
Hey, I got to see his stats real quick because I got first off, 50 points in 56 games. That's borderline. I don't know if I would say 10 mil per year, maybe 8 mil per year, but I don't know if I would say 10 mil.
I'll sell for 7.5.
Yeah, you know what? One of the people in the chat room literally just said to on one of the sites I'm on, one of them just said, I like him and all, but I wouldn't pay a dime over 7.5.
Oh, I guess great minds think alike. Thank you.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, that is absolutely insane, first off, to think that Zibanejad would be requesting that much. I mean, you're pretty much going to be handcuffing your own team to begin with if you're demanding that much money. I mean, granted, he is a couple of seasons removed from 75-point seasons, so maybe, perhaps, if they go back to a full 82-game schedule, maybe perhaps he can still put up those big numbers. So assuming
they are going to do a full season.
Yeah, they are going to do a full season next year. So maybe, I mean, he had 50 points in 56 games this year. So
yes,
assuming he gets back up to the 75-point level, you know, maybe you could justify giving him a big contract like that, but I don't know if I would do 10 mil per year. You know, you're basically handcuffing your own team with that. Like, hell, you know, Charlie McAvoy, he's probably in line for around, he's probably going to request about 10 mil per year from the Bruins, but ultimately, he'll probably sign to a team-friendly deal, like somewhere around $7-8 million. Even though he is rising to eventually become probably one of the best defensemen in the league,
yes.
I guess there's no culture, I should say, around the Rangers organization to where, you know, players won't take pay cuts, basically. So they'll basically try to maximize their value all that they can, even if it negatively affects their team. Which, I mean, that's fully understandable. You know, you want to maximize your value for as long as you're playing meaningful seasons. But, you know, at the same time, if you want to have the best opportunity to build a Stanley Cup contending team, you also, as a player, you kind of have to make a little bit of a sacrifice. I mean, we've seen it happen with a whole bunch of different teams in every sport. I mean, hell,
right.
why do people think the Patriots were so successful the past two decades?
Yeah.
Because they had players who were willing to take pay cuts if it meant being able to chase championship rings. So, obviously, I guess that's probably the next crossroads that the New York Rangers organization is going to be at. And also, that's another thing, too. If he gets 10 mil per year, where does that leave them in their pursuit for Jack Eichel?
Because,
you know, he has a massive contract already, or he'll be expecting a massive contract. So, you know, that will put a wrench into their Jack Eichel aspirations. Because if you do give Mika Zibanejad what he wants, you're almost essentially taking yourself out of the Eichel equation. So,
something to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's definitely something to think about. Let's see. Some other football news. Cam Akers of the LA Rams will miss the entire season after tearing his Achilles tendon while training.
Oh, yeah.
devastating for the Rams, as Akers was poised to have a breakout campaign this year in his second year as a pro. So now it looks like the Rams, they're probably going to look to bring in a veteran, maybe Le'Veon Bell, Adrian Peterson, Todd Gurley, perhaps a reunion with Todd Gurley. Perhaps it might be on the horizon for the Rams, but it's a huge loss to that run offense with them no longer having Akers here. Also, the Dolphins, according to Pro Football Network's Adam Beasley, the Dolphins would still consider trading for Deshaun Watson if his legal issues are resolved before the start of the season. As Watson is still, he still has those sexual misconduct allegations. There has been no update, actually, for quite some time in that whole situation. For now, it's expected that he will sit out of the entire 2021 season.
Right.
But if Miami does enter the fray, you're probably looking at Tua Tagovailoa and multiple first-round picks heading Houston's way if they decide to go after Watson. I did mention Aaron Rodgers. He turned down a two-year extension that was offered.
I don't know why he would do that.
And the deal would have kept Rodgers in Green Bay for the next 5 years, as he already has 3 years left on his current deal. And it also, the extension, according to Adam Schefter, would have made him the highest paid player in football.
And again, exactly my point. Why would you do that? They gave you 2 years. You'd be the highest paid, and you're just, bitching about the management.
Yeah, it's weird, the priorities that that certain players have nowadays.
Mm. It is.
Obviously, you may not see eye to eye with management, but you're still, technically, you're an employee. I mean, hell, if, I should bring in an analogy from Jim. If Jim had one of his employees misbehave like Rodgers is doing right now, Jim would probably fire that employee.
Yes.
With Rodgers showing his ass like he is in handling this situation. But obviously in the NFL, it's a completely different story because technically the players, they say it's a player-driven league. But let's not forget, the owners still, or the owners and the general managers, they still have every player's fate. Yeah, they still control them, exactly. So, Rodgers,
well,
maybe
that's too harsh of a word, but you get the idea.
Yeah, but it's still, Rodgers can do all this crap, but the general manager has made it well known that he will not trade Rodgers under any circumstance whatsoever. So, all of this fuss that Rodgers is doing is basically all for nothing, essentially. We do have one retirement. Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker Vince Williams announced his retirement after 8 NFL seasons. He was a 6th-round pick in the 2013 draft, and he spent his entire 8-year career with the Pittsburgh Steelers, playing in 121 career games, starting 69 of those games while recording 479 tackles, 20.5 sacks, 6 fumble recoveries, 2 interceptions, and 1 touchdown in the middle of that Pittsburgh defense. So once again, Pittsburgh's offensive or defensive line takes another critical hit this offseason. Also, the 49ers, they have signed Fred Warner to a 5-year extension through 2026. This will make Warner the league's highest paid off-ball linebacker, with the extension valued at over $95 million, including $40.5 million in guaranteed money. This surpasses Bobby Wagner's $18 million per year mark, and the Colts' Darius Leonard is expected to be next in line for a huge deal, so he could perhaps surpass this current deal that's been made by Fred Warner. Warner was an All-Pro first team last season at just 24 years old. He has started all 48 games he's appeared in since being taken with the 70th overall pick of the 2018 NFL Draft. Oh, and before we sign off, one last thing here.
Yes.
DeAndre Hopkins, you know how I mentioned earlier that he may sit out the season? Not only is he planning on sitting out the season, but he is also apparently threatening to retire.
Giving him that old incentive, huh?
Of
course.
He's planning to retire as a protest against the NFL's pro-vaccine stance. So,
like I said, if you refuse it, you're going to regret it later. You're better off taking it.
Yeah.
All right.
So
before
this
kicked off because we're out of time, I'll just leave it at that. I don't know what I'm going to do next week. It's my mother's birthday, so we might be celebrating it. So I'll have to get back. So I don't know yet, but I'll try to be back next week, same time, same station. Good night.
All right. Well, have a good night, Lou. And a reminder to everybody who's listening on demand here, we will have the next edition of the Big Brother Recap podcast this upcoming Friday night, which should be the 30th, I believe. Yeah, the 30th. Another edition of Big Brother, the Big Brother 23 Recap Show, hosted by Melissa and myself. If you have not subscribed yet to the Missy AE podcast, you can do so by going to blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE, or by subscribing on iTunes or Apple Podcasts by searching Missy AE. You'll get access to all of our Sports Whispers weekly content, all of our Survivor content and Big Brother content, and any of our podcasts that we've done in the past. So for Lou, thank you guys for joining in tonight. I'm Steve, and we will see you guys next week.